fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by our sponsors, Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, Saving the Lives of America's Heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the Great Florida Fire School, and the North Florida Fire Expo. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. And we welcome you to this, again, a very special podcast today, but this is our second Zoom podcast. My guest today is a good friend of the show, a longtime personal friend from the same area outside Boston, Todd LeDuc, and I'll tell you a little bit about him in just a moment. But we want to welcome you. If you're a new viewer slash listener, we welcome you and glad to have you with us. If you're a returning listener, we're always happy to have you here. And if you enjoy the show and you want to see and listen to more podcasts, you can go to our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv and go to the podcast tab, and it'll take you right to our library, and you can listen to as many of the podcasts as you want. And while you're on the podcast, on the website, normally I also say you can register for our newsletter, which you can, but today, even more importantly, with what's going on in the world today as we shoot this video on Thursday, March 26th, is we have a special page created for the state of Florida health and welfare recommendations for the coronavirus pandemic. So you can go to that page on our website at dalmatianproductions.tv. You can get it right from the homepage. It's just a click right there, and it'll take you and give you all the information from the state of Florida. And by the way, most of this is, it can be used by any state you're in the United States. It's basically the common sense of how you stay safe, how to keep yourself separated, et cetera, which we've all heard on the news, but it's always good to have something in front of you to see on there. If you're following us on Facebook, we hope you'll like us on either our Dalmat Prod or at Five Alarm Task Force pages. And if you do listen to us on a podcast, it's very important both for the platform you use and for us that you give us a great review, because the algorithm they use in searches is where those reviews put us. So if you haven't done a review yet, please, whichever platform you're on, almost all of them provide you the opportunity. Please leave us a great review, and we'll be very, very happy for that. And we're going to stop with the promos right there. We're going to get into our show. It's very important today, and I can't thank my guest enough, Todd LeDuc. Todd and I are from the same area in Boston, basically. We didn't know each other in Boston. And we actually had a mutual friend, not from Boston, but we had a mutual friend from upstate New York when I lived in Syracuse. First name was Mike, and Mike was going to be the videographer for Dalmatian Productions, our first pilot episode, and he was getting married. And he says, look, I was a notary, and he says, would you do the wedding? And I said, sure. He goes, well, there'll be a lot of Broward firefighters you'll get to meet. And sure enough, Todd was there, and we were talking, and we realized how close we were, how similar our interests were and had been, and we've been friends ever since. Unfortunately, because he rose through the ranks so quickly, retiring just under a year ago as the executive assistant chief of Broward County Fire. But even when he was there, and still today, as he serves as the, what's your official title, Todd?
The chief strategy officer for LifeScan Wellness Center.
Chief strategy officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers. And we've talked about them before. We're going to talk a little bit about them today, but our focus today is going to be on the pandemic and how to keep you, our first responders, whether you're firefighters. Matter of fact, actually, we can't start with firefighters. We have to start with you, our dispatchers. You have to remain safe. We need you because without you, the rest of us can't do our jobs. No matter what our job is, no matter how good we are at it, no matter what our rank is, without you, our dispatchers, we can't do the work that we have to do, and the public can't get the help they need. So we need to protect our dispatchers, our firefighters, our law enforcement officers, our paramedics and EMTs, our recovery operators, our road rangers, people are still on the road. All of you must be protected, and that's what this show is all about today. So I'm going to bring Todd right in. Todd, it's great to have you back. I'm sorry that you have to be home because you're limited to your travel as well as the rest of us, but it's great to have you here. What have you been up to since you were here about 3 months ago?
Sure. So, so Steve, thanks for having me back. As always, it's I do a lot of podcasts and webinars. It's always a special treat being with you and with our history and being here in South Florida. So, as you mentioned, I retired as executive staff member at Broward Fire Rescue after a 30-year career. And you mentioned joined LifeScan Wellness Centers as their chief strategy officer. So I've been busy, as you may have seen, traveling around the country, and I've had the wonderful fortune to continue to speak at many of the state, regional, and national fire service conferences, focusing on the survival of our first responders. As you mentioned, that's been something I've dedicated my career to. We talked about this on the show previously. We lose far too many responders from preventable causes. So I continue to have the good fortune working with LifeScan Wellness Centers that does about 40,000 public safety physicals a year to aimed at early detection, but to continue to speak and advocate around the country on the importance for proper early detection in our first responders. So as you mentioned, with the pandemic, we've kind of pivoted a little bit with the need to be prepared in responding to a unique health public health crisis. But, I feel that we still have some challenges with that in terms of the effect and the toll that it takes on responder well-being. So I'm honored to be able to talk to you a little bit about that today with your listeners and your viewers.
Thanks. You know what, before we jump to that though, for those who don't know what LifeScan Wellness Centers do and how they can help us, let's give them a quick couple of minutes to educate them.
Sure. No, as I mentioned, we actually started with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office 23 years ago in Florida. We've now expanded into, I believe it's upwards of 25 states, but all we do is exclusively public safety annual medical physicals. We follow guidance from the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA 1582, which is, of course, the guide for firefighter physicals, NFPA 1583, which many of your listeners will know is guidance on assessing the physical fitness of firefighters and the essential job functions and tasks that they have to perform. But it's a very, very comprehensive approach. It's actually a 3-hour exam, very comprehensive lab work. The physical itself, non-invasive ultrasound imaging, and at the same time, about an hour with an exercise physiologist doing a cardiac stress test, as well as the physical fitness assessment. So it's probably one of the most comprehensive approaches, to all aimed at early detection, just police and fire. We know that if we find, whether it's hypertension early or a cancer early or a cardiac event early, we know that you're likely to have much better outcomes for that member of the service. So, that's been my passion. I had the privilege of using LifeScan in Broward County for close to a decade. And I've got colleagues of mine that are alive today because of that approach, finding cancer early, finding cardiac issues early. So, I'm now as fortunate to be able to work with LifeScan in a team of great clinicians and just a great group of folks that have dedicated their livelihood and their passion to saving the lives of first responders. So it's a great fit, and we continue to do that, on a daily basis, and continue to have, that unique perspective of being great partners with a number of fire departments and law enforcement agencies across the country.
Right. Well, that's great. And, we've talked many times, and the fact that I think it's over 30 Broward firefighters had something found, and all of them were able to get those medical problems mitigated because they were found early through LifeScan. So folks, if you haven't heard of LifeScan, you need to have your department look into that. We'll give you Todd's email at the end of the show, and if you have any questions, you'll be able to email him, and he'll guide you with what you need or your department may need. But right now, today, all of you, our listeners, our viewers, we're all in the same basket right now with something that we've never seen. We never expected to see in our lifetime. As a matter of fact, even my late parents only had my dad was an infant during the 1918 flu. So thank God his parents survived, as did my mother's parents on their side. But that was the last major pandemic across the entire world, other than Antarctica, that we saw was 1918. So here we are over 100 years later, and we see this disease that, we'll just use a apolitical, got out of where it started from, and then got passed and passed and passed and passed. And here we are all today in 6 of the 7 continents, hunkered down. Our whole daily lives have been upended. A lot of people can't work. Even Todd is stuck at home right now because he can't be traveling. It's not safe for him to be able to travel, even though the purpose of WellScan is wonderful. The fact of the matter is that they can't do the job. You can't have people congregating together, all those situations. So I reached out to Todd and asked him, from his point of view, as a former member of the IAFC SHS branch, Safety, Health, and Survival branch, and because he was the leader in Broward County Fire Rescue of the care, the physical and emotional care for the firefighters during his tenure there, I had no one better to bring on than Todd to talk about this with us. So with that said, what are your thoughts on where we currently are? And we need to also remember, the concepts of coronavirus and COVID-19 are two different things. And I think our listeners need to be educated what the difference is between the two of them.
Yeah, let me start, Steve, by saying, certainly you made the point. We, over the course of my career, we've had a number of potential pandemics that we prepared for and ramped up to respond to: H1N1, swine flu, SARS. Influenza season in general, particularly in South Florida, where we have a higher senior population, our challenge. But you harken back to 1918 and the Spanish flu. In 2020, an unprecedented level of pandemics. So I want to, when we look at the spread in the United States, which of course seems to have been initially from travel-related cases, and now has turned into what's been termed community spread, which is why we have many areas giving isolation orders and stay-at-home orders. And we all now talking about the term social distancing, keeping 6 feet between ourselves, covering our nose, and proper hand washing and the importance of frequently doing that and how we do it. That challenge is continuing to evolve. And I know when we look at it nationally, you know, you hear now the term hotspots. And what does that mean? Hotspots are, you know, for the folks that are in those hotspots, they know exactly what it means because they're living it, those first responders. So we know over, I believe the number is 50% of the cases currently in the United States are in major metropolitan hotspots. We've seen those in obviously New York City, in the surrounding area, out on the West Coast, some of the California region, out in the Bay Area, a higher prevalence in Washington State. And obviously we've had a significant number of cases reported here in South Florida as well. So you know, other areas of the country, the spread does not appear to be as quick, and the precautions seem to be, you know, the public health officials are giving us great guidance on the things that we need to do to as they call it, flatten the curve. And what does right. that mean when you hear flatten the curve is there is what appears to be a fixed healthcare capacity. We've heard bits and pieces of that. But we know that we've only got so much capacity within our healthcare system before it is exceeded in a pandemic. So the more we can do prevention-wise on the front end allows the healthcare system, both the EMS system and the hospital system, to function more effectively. So that's where we're at currently. You know, when we look at the EMS. Response to this. We have great organizations, and I don't know if we'll be able to do a deep dive on all the details with the time we have today, but I know the International Association of Fire Chiefs, where you mentioned I've served on the board of directors of the Safety, Health, and Survival section for the last 15 years. The IFC president, Gary Ludwig, has very early on convened a task force on this pandemic, meeting regularly. They have involvement from the IFF is involved, as well as Department of Homeland Security. So we're getting that, not only that across the fire service and public health spectrum of guidance, but we're also having a direct line of communication through the government as well in terms of resources, needs, education. So one resource that's out there and people need to go take a look at it is the IAFC.org website. Right on the front page, not only can you see tracking for cases and how many responders have been exposed, but also what resources and guidance are out there in terms of things such as cleaning PPE, cleaning, disinfecting, what type of PPE levels. Additionally, another great resource that's really tackled this has been the International Association of Firefighters. That's another great IFF.org resource. So one of the things that we know is we're still learning a lot about this, about this virus and how it responds, how it reacts, what treatments perhaps may be effective. So the information is evolving so rapidly that it's something that as providers, we really need to, and as leaders in the industry, we need to take a daily check, pulse check, if you will, on that information as it comes out. So that's really essential. I know speaking with the IFF last evening, Walt Dix, the 12th District Vice President, for the first time we both said the Florida professional firefighters and the Florida fire chiefs had come together to issue joint guidance on the management of a potentially exposed member and how to handle that depending on the extent of the potential exposure. So there's a lot of information out there. We sometimes have trouble keeping up and processing it because it's coming out so quickly.
Right.
But it is one that we need to dedicate time and resource to maintain a daily vigilance of situational awareness. And that's really what it is the information is changing that rapidly. Is it situational awareness on how we respond to it?
And that's our good friend, Chief Rich Gasway, and his show, his SA Matters.
Absolutely. You know, I've had the honor of chatting with Dr. Gasway about the situational awareness of our own health and doing a 360 size up of our own health and wellness. But really, situational awareness in this epidemic is keeping up with the flow of information. And there is so much evolving information that we're learning, whether it's PPE issues, whether it's treatment issues, whether public health working on vaccine issues, vulnerable populations, what strategies we can put in place to protect our first responders. So the volume of information is really the challenge. And, you know, I see many departments handling this, and we see this also on a federal level where FEMA has been now dedicated as the lead federal agency. And I see many departments that you and I work with and talk to have implemented a full ICS approach to this. So making sure that they have the incident command NIMS model in place to be able to effectively respond, particularly in areas that are those hotspots that we mentioned that are seeing a high volume. So, you know, I think the importance for responders is not to panic, to take, you know, all the appropriate steps that are being put out there by the industry and industry leaders, whether that's CDC, whether that's IFF, whether that's IFC, and make sure that those that information is getting to boots on the ground and that we're effectively implementing the practices that are being recommended.
Right. And one of the things to clarify is that the coronavirus is the name of the virus itself. It's not new. There have been several types of it already. Matter of fact, Israel had dealt with, after it hit China first, had dealt with a previous version that affected poultry. And this was separate from the H1N1. And so they worked on it. They got the genome. And they did that, and they worked on, when they got once China developed the genome for coronavirus, this version that we're dealing with, they sent it, because of, there's a big connection between business-wise, China and Israel, and they got the genome, and they're about 6 weeks ahead of us right now on testing for mitigation of the symptoms and a vaccine. And so we're watching them very carefully. But COVID-19 that you're hearing, that is the name that doctors have applied to the lung infection created by the coronavirus. So that's the difference between the two. The coronavirus is the virus, just like a cold, you get the standard regular day cold. It's a virus you pick up someplace on the bus, at your desk, whatever. This is a virus. But what it causes in the human body right now, especially the ones in the lungs, and there are other symptoms, but the ones that have been most serious we found and have caused, sadly, the most fatalities is when it attacks the lungs and causes a very viral version of pneumonia, and that's been renamed COVID-19. So that's what those two are. And I think it's important for people to also realize you need to stay away from rumors and gossip about this. As Todd just said, there are great sources within the first responder universe. It's calling about DC universe and comics and stuff like that, but the first responder universe has professional great resources for every first responder out there, and you listen to them, and you listen to, for example, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the NIH, National Institutes of Health. He is the leading epidemiologist in the country, if not one of the leading ones in the world. When this guy talks, people listen, and that's what we should listen to. And Dr. Birx, who is, I think she's also, she's at the CDC. and she has great information. So these are the kind of people you want to listen to. Unfortunately, people react too much to rumors. And there was a case just earlier this week of a woman and her husband in Arizona who took the who got a hold of the anti-malaria drug. They both took it. Now, they had no symptoms yet. They didn't even know if they were exposed. But they took it as a preventive. He died 2 hours later, and she was in ICU. Last I heard, she was still in ICU if she's still surviving. That's what happens when you go with rumors and hearsay. You, as a professional first responder, whatever branch you're in, you know that you have your organization, your union, the national and international organizations there for you to back you up. Those are the people you should turn to, as Todd has said. Leave rumors and hearsay aside. We have a great job to do, an important job to do. And it's different this time. You know, one of us comes down with a head cold or a strep throat. So we go off duty for 48, 72 hours and we feel better and we get cleared and we're back. Once you're exposed and deemed to be exposed here, you're 14 days out. That's it. You're in quarantine for 14 days. So that's what's happening. That's what's causing this amazing drain on our first responders across the country in the hotspots. You see what's going on in New York. We see what's gone a little bit in Boston, not as bad. Boston kind of flattened the curve a little bit earlier than expected, but thank goodness. But down here in Broward, we had a little bit of forward progress yesterday, which was great news. Not a lot, but forward. Even the state of New York had a little forward progress yesterday. California is working on it. But one of the things that we'll talk about later that has been probably the most successful is quarantine and staying in place for the 14 days time period, because the less people we have out there spreading it, the fewer of regular citizens are going to be afflicted. And
Steve, I think it's important too to know, we have a lot of heroes that are out there, right? Whether that's at our grocery stores, keeping the supply chains moving, whether that's our postal carriers that continue to deliver needed essentials, whether that's medicine or otherwise. So I think some of the guidance that's out there, we really need to continue to reinforce. It certainly applies to first responders. I probably have been guilty as much as any other potential first responder of not washing my hands enough, right? But we know that that's one of the most effective ways of limiting exposure. Not touching our face. Again, I find myself actively having to practice that and stopping myself. But some of those coughing into our elbow or sneezing into, some of those would seem as very, very simple guidance that we've been given are actually, at the same time, some of the most effective practices at reducing exposure. So the other thing I just want to reinforce, because and I don't mean to minimize by any means some of the losses that not only in the United States but globally have already occurred. Those are tragic, and one loss of life is too many. But again, so as not to panic. We know, I think the numbers that I've seen at least, and those change daily, but we know that the majority of folks that present with some type of symptom, flu-like symptom, that has led them to being tested for the virus, the majority of those, the numbers I've seen are somewhere between 80 to 90%, I believe, are coming back negative. Right. So many of those folks have simply a common cold or still a strain of influenza that is out there from common flu. That's one. We also know that in the large majority, I've seen some estimates that as many as 60% of the U.S. population may at some point have that exposure. But most of them are mild symptoms, self-quarantine, or don't even know that they have asymptomatic. So unfortunately, we are seeing in some of the hotspots, we are seeing fatalities. We are seeing, you know, we've all talked about vulnerable populations. You know, our seniors are folks with underlying chronic medical conditions, immunocompromised folks. That's kind of a different risk level.
Right, sure.
But I think for the average exposure we're seeing, I just want to put it in perspective, both for our responders, as well as for the folks that are still out there continuing to keep essential services going. And that's important because, you know, the country still has to, as we're talking about this today, our responders are still responding to cardiac arrest, to asthma attacks, to structure fires. You know, we've always said we've become an all hazards provider.
Right.
And we certainly, this is one more example of it. But I wanted to put just the risk in perspective as well.
Right.
It's important, I think, for our first responders as this wears on them, that they keep that risk assessment in their mind as well.
Right. And what's really great is that we have so many, we know that this is a supply problem in many communities. And yet we've seen companies and even individuals come forward with small businesses and say, hey, we're going to make masks for you. We're going to make shields for you. And I saw a beautiful interview yesterday, young man who put in business style professional sewing machines in his apartment in Miami and is making N95 masks to the federal standards, meeting the standards. And he was able to get the cloth. He's trying to get more because they're making about 200 to 300 a day, but they're getting low on the fabric and they're trying to get more fabric. But it was amazing to see four people in his apartment in a one room, all cutting and sewing to help with doctors, nurses, our paramedics and EMTs, our firefighters who sometimes get there before the ambulance can. And they're the first ones in scene, and they need to be all PPD'd up. There have been great pictures online and on some of our great sites for fire and police and EMS, an entire rear cabin of an ambulance all sheeted in with plastic. So there's no way it stays in that space. And then as soon as that patient is delivered, and they go back and they get sanitized and cleaned, and then they resheet it again, and they're out for the next patient. And that's the dedication of our first responders and the people who want to support them. And that's including our doctors, our nurses, our anesthesiologists. Every doctor who can is out there trying to help. One of the hospitals, a couple of the hospitals, the anesthesiologists got together since they're not doing anything but emergency surgeries. Electives have all been postponed. So they started taking their machines, which are really not made to be long-term ventilators, but they can be used as a ventilator. And they've been delivering them from the surgical suite down to where they're needed in that hospital. And to me, that just shows you the dedication of these people.
Yeah, that certainly does. It really speaks to the spirit of America.
Absolutely.
You pointed to one, but there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of examples of individuals, neighbors, taking care of neighbors, manufacturing operations that have pivoted to step up to provide necessary equipment and supplies. So we will get through this, and I do. This is the greatness of America.
Right.
It reminds me of post 9/11. When we are faced with a challenge, we pull together and step up and overcome. So we will overcome this. My message, and I again thank you, Steve, for allowing with the timing of this being so important, the opportunity to get it out there is really a tremendous amount of resources that are coming out daily, and we need to rely on those resources to guide our continued operations and response.
Right, absolutely. All right, well, folks, we're going to take a little break here, and you'll see the screen go black if you're watching the video. You'll hear our promos in there, and then we'll be back with Todd to talk more about coronavirus, COVID-19, and its impact on the first responder community as we've defined it. We've enlarged that community, and that's what's important to keep remember. And we also, as Todd mentioned, let's think of our people from the post office and our UPS and FedEx people and deliveries from the supermarkets. All those people are being first responders because they're coming to help you out with whatever those needs are. So we'll be right back right after these few words. Please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on insighttrainingllc.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the gang from Insight Training? Well, with life a bit upside down, Insight Training has 2 great training sessions available online using Zoom conferencing capabilities. Visit our website at https://www.dalmationproductions.tv/insight-training-schedule.html. We have all the info you need right there, and you can even register from there as well. To make it easy for you, just go to our website, put your cursor on podcast, choose podcast sponsors, and choose Insight Training Schedule. We'll get you there one way or another. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using the Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
And we are back on this podcast. Here we go with our video again. And we hope you're getting some crucial information through this podcast and Zoomcast that we're conducting with my good friend, Todd LeDuc, former executive assistant chief for Broward County Fire Rescue, and now the chief strategy officer for Wellness, LifeScan Wellness Centers. That's it. I'll get it right. You know, with so many things to remember to say, I think within another couple of days, I'll be able to recite the alphabet backwards, because that's what I sing when I wash my hands. If I sing it nice and slow like a little kid with, and I give the big climax at the end, now I've said my ABCs, aren't you very proud of me? That gets me 23 seconds. So I got that.
That's great. I saw Neil Diamond. Recasting to Sweet Caroline for those of you that are of that generation. But whatever works. The important thing is that we're doing it well and doing it often.
Except I said I was doing Happy Birthday, but I kept running out of people. So I just had everybody in my family. And so I said the alphabet, I'll never run out of doing the alphabet. So we are back, and we are, this podcast in Zoomcast is dedicated to you, our first responders of all ilks. It doesn't make any difference what you do that makes you be a first responder in this crisis time in which we're living right now, one that none of us ever expected to see in our lifetimes. We heard about it in the past, all these plagues. Strangely enough, Passover is going to start in a week, just about 2 weeks. And of course, in that story that we tell as the Israelites fled Egypt, it was due to the 10 plagues that God visited upon the Egyptians for not allowing them to leave, the Israelites leave. So it's kind of a very sad coincidence this year. So now we're going to talk a little bit more about resources and about advocacy, because that has been Todd's, not only his goal, but it's been his passion since he got into the fire service. I mean, he started like the rest of us. He started in EMS work in Boston, at Northeastern, right? You said you got
That's right.
At Northeastern University. And I worked right around the corner there for a couple of years. And he made his transition and I made mine. That one of them took me into the fire service. Not that it was intentional, but it did. And brought me to my level in fire and EMS as well. And so that was, besides being from the same area of town, that brought us together and kept us close. And as I said, Todd's been a great friend of the show and on multiple times. And it's always great that when he has a minute, he'll let me know and say, hey, look, I got some stuff coming up, some interesting stuff. Can we do a podcast about it? And I'll break my back, both figuratively and literally, to find a spot. And this is what I did. Some of you know, if you're regular listeners, I was very quiet for a while, and that's because of a flare-up of my back injury that basically made me bedridden. I was able to get Dr. Clark's podcast recorded, but it took me 3 weeks before I was able to get it edited and loaded up for you to listen to. It's a great podcast, by the way. And he just called me yesterday with a great new idea for another one. So let's now focus a little bit more on resources. We've talked about the professional resources from the IAFF, IAFC, SHS. We have the basically all the fire organizations. I'm sure that that NVFC has their material out for volunteers. And again, you know, whether you're, you know, one thing about this virus, folks, it doesn't care who you are, what you do. You could be a great hero. You could have made a great save last Saturday, but when somebody came to congratulate you on Sunday, they accidentally passed you the virus. And that virus doesn't care that you made that great rescue, that save on Saturday. You got it. So we're going to talk about resources. We've talked a little bit about them, but we're going to go a little bit more in depth with Todd right now. So Todd, take it away, please.
Yeah, I think twofold. One, the resources, you know, we've covered much of it is stemming from Center for Disease Control in the guidance. You mentioned a couple of our national health experts, some would call treasures, that are guiding the pathway in terms of actions, both for first responders as well as for the public. So CDC is an excellent, tremendous resource, but also each of the stakeholder organizations within the fire service. And you know, even yesterday I saw fire engineer and Bobby Halton, my dear friend and co-author, hosted a webinar with Dr. Catherine, with Catherine West, who is a 45-year master's prepared nurse who's dedicated her career to infectious disease. And some great information coming out, including some studies on the length of time you would actually have to be exposed to airborne particles to really be infected. So there's, again, evolving science. It's coming out so quickly. FirstNet is hosting, I believe, later this week, a webinar with some of our West Coast fire service chiefs. Brian Fennessy, who's a dear friend of mine, is chief of Orange County Fire Authority. The chief of Seattle is also part of that, talking about the response issues that they've seen being one of those hot spots that we talked about earlier. So there is a tremendous amount. It can almost get to the point of information overload, but the challenge is dedicating the resource or resources, depending on your departments, to make sure that you're monitoring all that information. You know, we down here in South Florida, our typical emergency management event is a hurricane.
Right.
You know, in our hurricane season, which is half the year, just about, or it seems like a half of a year, you know, and we do a phenomenal job of 24/7 situational monitoring, right? Because we never know where that storm is heading, where it may end up. It twists, it can turn. We have to make evacuation decisions. And we really need to look at this pandemic response with that same heightened situational awareness. So I just want to drive that point home. And I do that because the rate of which information is coming out and changing. So in order to stay up with it, any of the platforms that the fire service follows regularly, I would recommend to attend as many of those webinars as you can. Frequently, whether it's the IFF, the IFC, CDC is posting daily updates on their website. And then, of course, your state and local and regional, right? Because every region or state may have a different evolving challenge with this. So as I mentioned in Florida, it was nice to see the Florida Fire Chiefs and the Florida Professional Firefighters team up to put some guidance out there on impacted firefighters. But Steve, I also wanted to use this, you know, as a opportunity to talk about responder wellness and self-care, right? Because as you know, as we respond to this pandemic, we still have all the same threats to public safety, health. We still have hypertension out there. We still have, you know, unfortunately, cancer threats. We still have cardiac risk, and then we have the behavioral health concerns. I don't even want to say it routine, right? Because our, you know, someone else's worst day in their life becomes our routine day as first responders. But there's behavioral health threats that come with that. You know, we see whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder, firefighter, law enforcement officer suicide, EMS suicide. So now we add the pandemic response. In many cases, just the uncertainties, the fear, the heightened call volume on top of, you know, potential exposure. So responder well-being and self-care becomes a huge issue that I think we need to be talking more about. You know, we kind of have talked about what's the impacts of social isolation, you know, and the challenges that come with that for responders. We need to be talking about the physical and emotional toll that the pandemic response is likely to take on them, if it hasn't already taken a toll, and what some of the things we need to be thinking about and doing. And again, it gets back to common sense, self-care. We don't preach enough, and unfortunately, I don't think we practice it enough, and I think we're all guilty of it. So I'm actually working right now on a fire engineering blog that'll be uploaded shortly. But simple things, if you simply go out and look at self-care and self-wellness, we need to be, I know it's challenging in these times, but we need to be figuring out how to get decent sleep, as much of it as we can. Simple things. How do we, limit caffeine and sugar and alcohol before bedtime, dark and cool sleeping area? Our nutrition plays a vital role. You know, that's a challenge in public safety when we're running 24, 26 calls a shift. But the food we put in has a tremendous impact on our physical and well-being and our performance.
So
limiting the sugars, limiting high carbs, limiting the fats, focusing on more fruits, more vegetables. Hydration plays a huge role, even in virus, in immune response to viruses. So are we hydrating well with water? Downtime, as silly as that sounds, taking carve it out wherever you can, if it's 10 minutes for simple meditation, reflection, mindfulness. That it's, I call it me time. It's your time, where it's not the kids are screaming, the alarms are going off, but now I've got a 5-minute breather. Take that time for some downtime. I know it's a challenge. All the gyms are closed, but we need to figure out how to continue to stay physically active. We know that simple exercise, walking, a little bit of cardio, some yoga, whatever works for you, is essential to de-escalating that stress and providing for a more healthy physical you and a more healthy psychological you. And then lastly, we all have, I think I just published an article on fire engineering about hypertension in firefighters. We know it's a huge issue with firefighters, and it's something we need to be paying attention to when we're in times of higher stress, higher uncertainty. Our body reacts sometimes by kicking into overdrive. So we need to be more attentive to monitoring our own blood pressure, self-care. Everyone now is being told to check in with their healthcare provider by telemedicine app if they need to. But we still have healthcare providers out there seeing members that need to be seen. So I think it's important that we, in the midst of response, we take a brief time out and say, are we doing everything we need to be doing to protect our own health, wellness, and safety? And, long-term even, I was having a discussion recently, after 9/11, we created the World Trade Center health monitoring system. And we don't know, there may be long-term effects to firefighters from, response and exposure to this pandemic and to our healthcare providers. And you mentioned our dispatch operators and the stress that they're under.
Right.
So all of these, whether you're a doctor, a nurse, a firefighter, a law enforcement officer, a dispatcher, we need to, more now than ever, be prioritizing self-care and our own wellness in terms of overcoming, adapting, and getting through this. So it's a message I want, again, we've got, I know, limited time that we spend when we tape these, but there's a lot of information out there. Everyone's on the internet now. I saw Netflix, I think, crashed yesterday with technical issues, but simply you can go on a search engine and look up self-care and all the things that I kind of touched on. We need to put those into practice now. I mean, I'd love to see people doing this during everyday course of life, and we should, but they're more important now than ever, so we don't burn out and lose our first responders due to preventable causes during this time of uncertainty.
Right, absolutely. And for those people who are listening who maybe are buffs, they're not actively involved in first response as a first responder, but other first responders, you and I will know, once we start working, whether we're career or volunteer, we get wired. Our wires change a little different. And when that bell rings, we're out the door. We know what we have to do. We respond. We get our gear. We get onto the vehicle, whatever we're doing, we do it. And we're used to that. We're used to that both bells going off and that instant reaction. When we're at home for 14 days because we're in isolation because of a possible exposure, that doesn't mean that wire just, there's no switch. You can go to the upper left side of your shoulder and say, okay, reacting time for alarms, shut off. We can't do that. So our body is looking for that same jolt and that adrenaline jolt that we don't get. And one of the things that one of the doctors said on Tuesday is that the last thing you should ever do is stay inside your house for 14 days. You need to get outside. You have to get sunshine. Your body needs sunshine to make vitamin D. Without vitamin D, you're going to become very lazy. You're going to become very lethargic. Your body's not going to function properly. And even if you are contaminated, your body won't react well enough, maybe, that you could avoid any involved medical care. You might be able to fight it off on your own, but you need to get out and breathe fresh air. You need to get out and get some sunlight. Yes, I know up north it's cold. As I said, Todd and I are both from Boston. I lived in Syracuse for 4 years. I can tell you what cold's all about, but you still have to get outside. Keep your distance, keep social distancing. That's fine, but don't just get into an igloo and just sit there 14 days just waiting. Okay, I got one day and 22 hours and 36 minutes and 14 seconds left. Your body's not going to, and that's going to hurt the emotional health that Todd talked about earlier. And that affects all of us. You can't not be a first responder and be honest and say you've never had an emotional issue because of a call. If you are, then you're a robot and not a human. Because every one of us, at one time in our life and one time in our career, have been on a call that changed us. And you can't, this is not the time now to start dwelling on those thoughts. Keep yourself busy with things in the house. Keep house projects, honey-do lists, whatever you want to call them. Keep yourself busy. That's my wife and I have been here. She's a teacher. She's been in now for almost 2 weeks. We've been doing home projects. We have to go out occasionally for groceries, but when we do, we have our gloves on. We don't wear masks out there because as we're healthy and we have no, even though we're over 65, we don't have any underlying immunosuppressive problems. So we won't wear the mask because those masks are needed by the first responders. But we'll go out, do our shopping quickly, get back in the car, take the gloves off before we touch the steering wheel because I've already sanitized the car. Come back to the house, put gloves on to take the products out of the house, make sure we wipe those down, and then put that away. But that's daily life. The only difference is we're wearing gloves. That's all it is the difference. Our life goes on. She's not teaching, but she's teaching. She's teleteaching. The school started Monday with a teleteaching program. So she's on about 4 hours every day teaching her students the program. But part of the other job that she works for, they let them go. They're just using your sick time to pay. And if you don't have sick time, that's it. You have to file for unemployment. And that's another big emotional thing. A lot of us, the best word to say it is, we are embarrassed to apply for unemployment. We think we're asking for a handout. Remember something. The money you get with unemployment is money you put in for it. This is not money that somebody's you're asking for a gift. It's the same thing with Medicare and Social Security. We pay for this out of every paycheck. You look at your stub and you will see your deductions besides federal tax and state tax. You'll look at Social Security and Medicare fees taken out. Maybe it hasn't been enough. We're not here to argue finances right now. But if you need to apply for Social Security or unemployment, there's no embarrassment to it. It's your money you want back. Think of it as you put that money in the bank and now you're taking it out in small amounts. That's the best way to look at it. And so that's part of the important part of being emotionally savvy as a first responder in these cases. don't let that old adrenaline jump, you know, make you cloistered in your home and you're just waiting for it, because it's not going to come in those 14 days. So find other interests that you can do. As I said, the simple ones are house projects. Deal with them. You put them off. Oh, I was supposed to do that. I was supposed to do this. Life gets in the way. We all know that. We've all made plenty of plans and it gets in the way. But that's okay. There are things that we can do and keep us busy and wait for, keep an eye on the calendar. When is my time up? Wait for the call from your supervisor. Hey, come on back. You're clear. Nothing happened. Let's get you back on the rig and get going. And that will be the happiest moment that you'll have after when this is over. All right. Let's touch on one other one. And this deals with what we're talking about. You have been, throughout your career, since I've known you, a staunch advocate for firefighter health and wellness, as have I. You were one of the reasons that it became a part of, you were one of my first guests. So between that and finding out about the cancer initiative that I did not know about, I was naive. All the cancer stuff I heard with first responders, I blamed on 9/11. And we know the toll that post 9/11 work has taken on our brothers and sisters in New York. There's no doubt about it. We just lost former battalion chief Harley, I think that was Charles, something like that. Fire marshal also, a great, just an amazing firefighter. He is a firefighter's firefighter. And we lost him from coronavirus, COVID-19. But, you know, it's a lot of our other brothers and sisters got contaminated from the pollution in the air when they were working the pile and subsequently after 9/11. And that, when you taught me about health and wellness here and my other guest taught me about the Cancer Initiative, it became the mission statement of the podcast to be about firefighter health, wellness, fitness for duty, the Cancer Initiative, and the behavioral health initiatives. And that's what we're about. And you have been that advocate. So what strategies should we be thinking about to address our wellness during this time?
Yeah, we touched on responder wellness and well-being. We've touched on the precautions that are coming out and being recommended that we put in place to protect ourselves and minimize exposure risk to the virus. But I don't want us to forget, because the rest of our calls continue to come. As I mentioned, we continue to, if you're a law enforcement officer, you continue to enforce the law and protect the communities you serve. If you're a dispatcher, you continue to answer, baby not breathing calls. If you're a firefighter paramedic, you continue to treat the cases that are not necessarily related in any manner to the virus, or that you're responding to, a car crash or a structure fire. So, we know that in our profession, when I say our profession, fire service, certainly, but it bleeds over into most all public safety, is the three biggest preventable causes of death and disability fall into three, I call it the three-legged stool. You've heard me talk about this before, three buckets. Cardiac death, largely from many factors, one of the largest ones being high blood pressure, not getting it controlled, obesity, the effects of the fight and flight symptoms that you just talked about, when we have to go fight a fire or we get into a combat situation as a LEO or law enforcement officer, the body starts going into overdrive. And if we haven't addressed our risk factors, bad things happen. The second leg of the stool is that cancer that you talked about. And even the dogs agree with that. It's become an occupation. We know that, unfortunately, 39% of Americans at some point in their life are going to battle cancer. We know that, as we get older, the risk increases. But we know that for firefighters, 9% higher risk than general population, 14% higher risk of mortality than general population. So we're a unique group of, based on the work we do. And then that the last bucket is the behavioral health of responders, everything from substance abuse to stress to post-traumatic stress, anxiety, sleeplessness, to unfortunately suicide. So I think it's important as we talk about most of the segment on the response to the pandemic, we also have to be mindful that all that same risk that we have day in, day out, based on unfortunately the occupations, stressors that we face in occupational risk, we can't not forget to put into place those mitigation practices that we all have been talking about and we all have been doing. So for some of the risks, that's almost all of the risks, that's changing how we operate with practices, with our policies and procedures, with our decontamination at scenes. It's about early detection, that even though we're still in a response to this crisis, we still have to have medical surveillance of our public safety members, because that risk that they face, it doesn't go away just because of the pandemic.
Right.
So it's, I think that's important that we, as we struggle to adjust our operations to this unseen enemy, we are doing a wonderful job at rapidly implementing operational response to effectively respond to the virus. But we also have to not forget all the other occupational risks that still have been there and will continue to be there. So I want to again, rightly so, we're all talking about the pandemic response, but I think you know, we continue to see responders that we have line of duty deaths or tragic disability from occupational preventable reasons. So let's keep that on the same radar with the pandemic risk, and we will get through this, but we have to make sure we're still looking out for our members and our frontline, you know, boots on the ground in their health and wellness as we go through it.
When you play up for your A game as a first responder, part of that prep up is take care of yourself.
For sure.
You know, one of the things, you know, we've talked about this, I've shared this once before on the podcast, was that I had a couple of scares, and a year ago this month, my cancer doctor, all of a sudden the word oncologist, there we go, my oncologist said, you know, I'm tired of a little bit this, a little bit that. He goes, you know, to me, a little bit is like a woman saying she's a little bit pregnant. So he says, I want to do a bone marrow assay on you. I said, okay, tell me what it involves. So he said, told me, I said, how painful is it? He goes, well, I can talk with you, Steve. I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal. I'll only give you the lidocaine, but I won't give you any epi, because epi is what causes all the stinging. So I'll give you the lidocaine. It'll take a little bit more, but you won't have the stinging. You just feel the pressure. I said, okay. So we did it, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It really wasn't. It was right there in the office. It wasn't a big procedure or anything like that. And so he said, I'm going to run both the regular medical and the genetical testing on you, because my late mom had lung cancer, and one of my other family members had prostate cancer. So I said, yeah, that's good. Let's do it. So I came back 2 weeks later for the medical results, and he says, you're clean. All your markers are clean. So I said, what about the genetic? He goes, I have to wait 2 weeks. He says, no, I don't need to do it. He says, I'm based on what I've seen and all the markers that I looked at through the bone marrow assay and the bone chips, he says, you're 100% clean. I said, let me ask you one question. Now, until 2016, he had no idea about the firefighter cancer initiative and the cancer problem. And I was the one who got him interested in it. And then he got interested. And then he even, according to what he said, he talked to, I think he talked to Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez, our friend down at University of Miami Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, who's been a guest on the show several times. And he learned a lot about it. And so when I was leaving, I asked him what's the question. I said, look, you know, I only had 8 years in. very early on, 77 to 85. That's what I was out in 85 because of an injury. I said, so with that knowledge, if this had come back positive, what kind of odds would you have given me because I was in the fire service then? And he paused for a minute and he said, I probably would have bet my last dollar on it. So talking about getting by a hair, literally I did. Okay. I'm glad I was clear. Absolutely. I don't worry about that right now. But the fact is, even though I was out before all the benzene byproducts that we fight fires with today, he still thought that from those 8 years that early, that there was still a good chance that I could have been contaminated then by a carcinogenic process that could have affected me today. So never think that you're Superman or Supergirl, Superwoman, that you have a shield on that protects you against everything. That's BS, my friends. Okay. We protect ourselves. We decide for the most part, the best level of protection we give. And if you listen to somebody like Todd and you check the websites that we're talking about for you with this issue that we're dealing with today, you can stay ahead of the curve as long as you're serious about being healthy and keeping away as far away as possible and limiting your chance of exposure. You are in control for the most part. And we've given you a lot of information here. You'll be able to refer to this at any time. And before I even quit, I'm going to give you Todd's email because we're not going to quit yet. We have a couple more things quick to cover. But to reach Todd by email, if you have any questions about LifeScan and what it can do for you and things like that, you can reach him at todd.leduc, L-E-D-U-C, at LifeScanWellness.com. Again, that's Todd dot or period, whatever you want to call it, Todd period Leduc at LifeScanWellness.com. And we're going to be back with Todd in just a moment. We're going to cover up a couple of things. We're going to drift away a little bit from the virus situation, but we're going to talk a little bit more about good things in this as we wrap up this show. So we'll be right back right after these words. And please stay tuned. Tone sound and the dispatcher announces stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on.
Okay, so...
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but you just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take in a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better. When you get back to the barn, you throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners. But as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey, guys, you call out, I'm not feeling. And your voice trails off, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis and be sure to advise him or her that you are a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, the NVFC, or the IAFC-SHS website.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Dear John.
Okay, and we're back with my guest, Todd LeDuc. We're going to be wrapping up our Zoomcast podcast. The next question I want to ask to close off on the virus before we turn to something else is the importance, let's talk about the importance of exposure tracking, Todd, please.
Yeah, that really is a piece, not only with the virus, but with really any type of, even with cancer exposure. There certainly is some great resources. NIFORS, it's an app that is at no cost, can be downloaded from the App Store. Dr. Lori Merrill Moore runs the Institute for Public Safety Data. Basically, they've actually now added a coronavirus COVID-19 potential exposure app pull down. So you can actually, if you believe you've had an exposure, document it. The same for our cancer mitigation. We look back as to potential exposures, and you mentioned even yourself, when those occurred, how frequently they occurred. So it's important not just for research and developing mitigation strategies for the fire service as a whole, but also for documenting our own exposures. So I would encourage everyone, if you're not familiar with NIFORS, just Google NIFORS online on a search engine, go to the App Store and download it. It's a wonderful resource to enable you to make sure that you're capturing everything throughout your career to protect yourself and your family.
Okay, great. And now we're going to leave the whole concept of the virus for a minute, and we're going to talk about something that's been on a couple of emails lately and postings on Twitter. And that is, I understand you are running for re-election. You've spent 15 years as when you were one of the chiefs at Broward County Fire Rescue, 15 years on the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival, or SHS. You can't say it too many times too quickly because your tongue falls out of your mouth. Section Board of Directors, and you're running for re-election. Again, let's talk about that for a couple of moments.
I am. It's been my honor to have been elected and have served the 12,000 plus members of the International Association of Fire Chiefs and the 1,300 or so members of the Safety, Health, and Survival Section for the last 15 years. I'm honored that they had that amount of trust in me to allow me to work with a great group of colleagues on our board of directors continue to advance for the membership. A lot of the things we talked about today and previously on the show, just making the fire service safer, healthier, in putting that culture of wellness out there. And I think we've seen tremendous amount of just embracing of health, safety, and wellness within the fire service over that last 15 years. So it's time for myself to run for re-election. I continue to have the passion to serve, and continues to really be something that drives me. I hope the membership would consider supporting my re-election. I've been blessed to been endorsed by seven past presidents of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, as well as personally endorsed by the presidents of the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, and the Executive Fire Officers Association, and there were leaders. It's a passion. It's something I take very seriously. You mentioned I've traveled around the country and the globe, working on issues that are important to the members of Safety, Health, and Survival and the Fire Service. I've been blessed to have just recently been joined by a group of over a dozen Fire Service industry experts that came together, including my dear friend Bobby Halton, to be the editor-in-chief of the Surviving the Fire Service book, which is all dedicated to just making sure that our firefighters return home safely at the end of their career and enjoy a long and healthy retirement. So for those of you that are members of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and in particular the Safety, Health, and Survival section, I humbly ask for your continued support, and I can promise you this, that I'll give it my all, and we'll continue to serve with the highest level of passion and integrity, and I thank you for consideration.
Well, that's great, and I wish you all the luck. I can say that I've learned so much from you since we started the podcast back in 2016. Every time you come on, you share information that is terrific and important for not only just our firefighters, but a lot of it applies to other first responders as well. And you've always shown me that dedication and passion for not just the job that we love, of just doing the job, being firefighters, doing rescues and fighting fires, but to keep all of us well, healthy. And I think, again, volunteers, volunteer chiefs, members of IAFC also?
They absolutely are. Oh, good. It's one of our largest sections.
That's great. So, you know, it's important for, if you're a volunteer firefighter listening, and you've heard Todd today, you've heard him before in other podcasts, it's important to take that message back to your chief and let him or her know that, you know, this is a gentleman who has striven for his entire career to focus number one on health and well-being for his people that he responded to when he started off as an EMT and paramedic. And he's kept that passion alive and reapplied it now to firefighters in general. All, first of all, his department, and then spread it around. And that's why he became so active. And I can tell you that since I follow him on social media, I see how much he travels. I see where he goes. I see his messages that he delivers at these conclaves and seminars, and something even as large as FDIC or Expo. It's what's important to realize is that you have a great person who has dedicated his career to the well-being of his brothers and sisters. He's a great firefighter. I'm not going to take that away from him. You don't get to be an executive assistant chief if you're just, you know, sitting there and tying knots in the firehouse when you don't have a call. He's a great firefighter, but he's dedicated his life as an officer from his first appointment to his retirement last year to the well-being of the fire service, not just his fire service, but the fire service. So I can't vote. I'm not a member. I'm just a grunt. But I can tell you, as being my friend and knowing him for as long as I have and seeing his career over the years, I can tell you that this is a man I would be proud to vote and vouch for, and to see him back on the sitting on that board doing what he does best, and that's helping firefighters stay healthy and stay emotionally well.
Thank you, Steve, for those very kind and generous words. I'm very humbled, and I haven't said it this show, but thank you for all you do. You know, you have a passion for the fire service yourself, and you've taken that to a higher level of using that passion and your talents to help promote a better fire service as we continue to all work towards that endeavor. So thanks for all you do.
Well, thank you very much. It's been really a pleasure to do. It's become a passion. In 3.5 years, we're here. We are in the second half of our fourth year of doing this podcast, churning out between 40 and 50 a year. And it's all for one purpose. It's for my brothers and sisters, for the buffs, so they learn, they get a real good view of what the fire service is all about. And so my thanks to my friend, my guest, Todd LeDuc, for joining us today to discuss the issues with the pandemic of coronavirus and COVID-19 and all he could share with us about keeping ourselves healthy and wise to what's going on in our daily life today. If you are in quarantine, you're listening to this, you're going to be going out soon. And, you know, you got to be well ready for it. You know, on the other hand, during those 14 days, don't just lay around drinking beer and watching old television shows, because that bell's going to ring in a few more days and you got to be out there. Folks, did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. I want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the 2020 North Florida Fire Expo, and the 2020 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us, just like Todd was today, or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. You can follow us on Twitter at DalMattProd or at @cause_origin, on Facebook at @DalMattProd or DalMattProdFire, and on Instagram at Dalmatian Productions. And stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog on our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green, proud to be your host today. Until next time, please stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home. We'll see you next time around. Thank you. Bye-bye.